Explore the night skies with our large range of high-quality telescopes. Whether you're a novice or an astronomy expert, we have the right telescope for you in our Australian Geographic e-store. Explore the whole range and find the right telescope for you today. Go to www.australiangeographic.com.au/shop. That's www.australiangeographic.com.au/shop. Hi, I'm Angela Heathcote and this is Talking Australia, a podcast by Australian Geographic.
John is an award-winning cinematographer specialising in oceans. He's been behind some incredible natural history films documenting the behaviours of sharks, crocodiles and orcas. His life is an example of how you can turn a passion for diving and photography into a dream job. So I'm really excited to talk to John today on this episode of Talking Australia. John, I'm so excited to have you on Talking Australia today. So I know you're a cinematographer and your specialty is water cinematography. And you've been behind films like Blue and Turtle Odyssey and Sea Lions and shows like the Emmy-nominated Life on the Reef. And I have to say my personal favourite has to be Magical Land of Oz. Just looking at your unique skill set, I'm wondering, what came first? Was it like a love for the ocean or was it photography?
Thanks for the intro, Angela. Look, I've always loved the ocean and by far the ocean definitely came before photography. I was really lucky. I actually learned to scuba dive when I was 13 years old in the Caribbean, which was amazing and kind of been hooked ever since. And I went on to study a marine biology degree at the University of Plymouth as well. So I've always had pretty close ties with the ocean, and the photography came later. But yeah, ocean is always paramount in my world.
So how did you kind of go into cinematography? Like obviously you started out as a really young diver. By the way, that's a very young age to be diving. And then you kind of, you know, you did your degree, and then how did you kind of mold photography and cinematography into that? Like how did that come about?
Well, so when I actually did my marine biology degree in the UK, you actually had to do your commercial dive ticket at the same time. So I actually sort of went down the path of commercial diving a lot more, and I ended up doing, you know, I was working in the UK as a commercial diver, which was pretty horrific and it's pretty cold, dirty and nasty. But with that, you know, you really do become a very solid experienced diver. And I was lucky actually to help out on a few productions as a support diver on film productions. And that's where I kind of got my hook for photography, and I really actually wanted to get behind the camera. I was lucky. I then moved to Australia and I bought a camera and I was shooting a lot of just, you know, the local wildlife, which is, you know, stunning. And I used to sell a fair bit of stock footage as well at the same time. And then I started to work a bit with Andrew Eddinghouse from ET Escapes and doing a few segments with him. But then I did a ABC production, Shark Harbour, where I worked with Paul De Gelder. And it really, for me, that was probably the first decent production that I worked on as the principal underwater cinematographer. And then from that, you know, I've been really fortunate to work on some, you know, amazing projects with amazing production companies. So I've been pretty lucky. And as you said, you know, some of my favorites, Life on the Reef, Blue, Magical Land of Oz, and then venturing into that IMAX world with Turtle Odyssey. But yeah, I think, a lot of work and a lot of luck as well.
And obviously filming in the water, for all its beauties at the end of the day, it is a potentially very dangerous place. So I'm wondering what kind of precautions go into filming, you know, animals like sharks, orcas and crocodiles, and have you had any really close calls?
It's funny, actually, I get asked that question, you know, quite a bit. And actually, you know, everyone talks about the sharks and the animals, but, you know, by far the most dangerous part of my job is always actually the logistical side of things. So more actually, you know, getting run over by a boat, getting caught in a propeller, getting smashed when it's rough conditions. That concerns me way more than the animals. Have I had close calls? I've been pretty lucky, actually. I wouldn't say I've had any specific close calls. I've had a couple of white sharks come pretty close to me, and I've had Andrew Fox pull me back in a cage when one came exceptionally close. But I think probably my most, not scary moment, probably exciting moment, but we're doing some work off Bremer Canyon, which is a canyon system about 70 kilometers offshore in southwest WA. And we're filming this pod of orcas, and they just made a kill, and they're all kind of circling around. And I've been trying pretty hard to get in the water with them. And they've, you know, if they don't want to get involved, they don't get involved. And I but I jumped in, and this one orca just beeline right towards me. And I was just, my heart was going, maybe this wasn't such a great idea to do this. And it came up, and I could feel it smashing me with its sonar and its echolocation. It just going right through me, and it checked me out. It rolled over onto its side, and then it lifted up its gums like a dog does and showed me its teeth. And honestly, it was the most amazing experience, really quite scary. But I think it was just I spoke to orca scientists, and no one really gave me a clear answer. But yeah, it felt very much like it was just assuming its dominance to me and saying, stay away from our food. I could eat you in a second if I wanted to. But it was a pretty amazing experience.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're still with us after that encounter. When it comes to, obviously, those shoots, I can imagine that there's a lot of preparation and understanding animal behaviours and things like that. What is the prep that goes into doing these kinds of shoots?
So I think there's a few different ways for the preparation. I think first is a solid production researcher. So there are people that do an awful lot of work working out exactly when things are going to happen, how they're going to happen. I talked to a lot of scientists, and in fact it's a great thing having a marine biology degree, because I can talk to scientists not necessarily at their level, but I have a good understanding of what they're doing. And really, they are key to working out animal behaviours, locations. And then it kind of comes down to then logistics and weather and matching that up. And then obviously you have then the camera prep and everything else that goes with it. And I think me personally, so obviously, I go through, I do it every day. So I run through all that kind of physical stuff. But one of the things I do is actually, I'll actually visually run through what's going to happen and go through those steps in my head. And I think, what challenges am I going to face and how am I going to overcome them? And I literally will sit there on a plane to location or whatever and actually kind of shut my eyes and actually just run through how my day is going to look. And I go through it and I work out what I've got to do and how I'm going to approach it, to get the results that I need. There's a lot of stress involved as well due to the fact that, there's an awful lot of money involved in a lot of these things to get to location. And so I think it's just a question of being prepared, understanding what you've got to do. And it's very different to that holiday environment where you're just going to kind of jump in the water and shoot some cool stuff. And, I have a very strict shot list, and I want to stick to that shot list as close as possible, because otherwise it'll take an editor loads of time to run through footage, which obviously costs money. So it's key that, I go through everything, I shoot that shot list, I'm prepared, and basically just, go through that plan, which I've gone through in my head.
I want to go back to something that you mentioned before about when you were coming into water cinematography, you got yourself a camera. I guess a lot of people who are fans of water photography, there's that step of how do I get into it? What's the best gear? It's so expensive. I don't want to take the risk. Like where do I kind of go there? So I'm wondering, for the tech people out there, would you be able to talk us through, that beginning, the beginning equipment that you had and I guess what you use now?
I remember very early days, I spoke to Howard Hall, who's an amazing underwater cinematographer, an absolute legend. And I remember exactly asking him that question. And he said to me, it was like, basically, buy the best you can afford, but don't go broke in doing it. So, and I think that's, really solid advice. I think there's always going to be a better camera. There's always going to be, the latest and greatest. But really, work within your budget. Never buy a camera thinking that you're going to get work that's going to pay off that camera, because that's just not going to happen. And I think also a lot of stuff is, look at the secondhand market. You can actually pick up some amazing deals where people are always upgrading to the latest and greatest, and you're picking up something which is, 2 or 3 years old, for a great price. You also have to remember as well, a lot of your delivery, unless you're shooting for cinema specifically, most of it's going to go online content. So it doesn't really need to be that amazing. I mean, there are cameras that were made 10 years ago which are fantastic. I'm thinking about the Sony EX1. That camera still, I think the color reproduction from that camera for the size, is amazing. I started off, I can't remember, it was a PD 150, I think, a Sony Handycam, which I purchased. And look, I think at the time it was a very mediocre kind of camera. I got an Icolite housing for it, which is a pretty mediocre housing, but it was within my budget. And I kind of moved from there. Now I shoot on pretty exclusively on Reds. I do own my own camera, but I'm still in that stage where now when they've brought out 8K cameras and I'm thinking, you know, do I upgrade to that? Do I wait? So it's always a dilemma. And I think, you know, you have to be smart about it and, you know, purchase what you can afford, and, you know, go from there. The key is actually the shooting part, not the camera bit. People get very caught up in the technology. But I can tell you, it's, you know, the more you shoot, the better you'll get. And by getting in the water as soon as you can with, you know, something, a camera which isn't necessarily as high spec, will make you a lot better shooter. And I think as well, those lower spec cameras actually make you shoot better because they have more limitations. So you have to work harder to get as good shots or better shots.
And as I said before, you've worked on all these incredible programs. Have you got like a favorite project?
My favorite project. So I think Magical Land was a favorite for me. I really loved working on that show. I know the director and the executive producer exceptionally well at Northern Pictures, and they kind of just were like, John, here you go, you've got, you know, 5 days here, you've got 2 weeks here, you've got, and so they just kind of let me run and just shoot my subject as I kind of wanted to shoot it. So that was exceptionally fun. And then probably Turtle Odyssey comes in there as well, because, you know, it was my first time shooting 3D, which was a challenge, but a challenge I really thoroughly enjoyed. And in fact, Turtle Odyssey as well was exceptionally small crew. It was mainly, you know, two or three of us on shoots, which is nice. It means you're very flexible, you're versatile, you move when conditions change. And so, yeah, I think probably those two have been my favorite projects.
Subscribe to our AG magazine for 6 months for just $30 and save 33% on the newsstand price. That's 3 issues of our award-winning magazine delivered to your home for just $30. Plus, you will also receive exclusive benefits, including 10% off all products purchased in our e-store. So don't wait. Go to www.australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia for our special offer. That's www.australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia.
And just going off, you know, talking about Magical Land of Oz, that was such a landmark series for the ABC and I guess for Australian viewers, because it was, I think, the first blue chip natural history documentary in something like 20 years. I guess Australia is a really interesting place for making natural history films, in that, you know, we used to have the ABC Natural History Film Unit, which shut up shop in 2007. And since then, it's been kind of hard to get things off the ground. So I'm wondering, what's it like working in that landscape?
You know, it was a great commission by the ABC to do Magical Land. And I think it had great great ratings, and I think that gave them confidence. I actually have now worked on, and it's going to be released this year actually in probably a couple of weeks, is on the East Australian Current, which is another 3 1-hours all on the ocean on the East Coast. And, you know, I think we are so lucky in Australia. We have such amazing marine life and just, you know, the diversity. You know, we've got the cool temperate waters of Tasmania, we've got that amazing kind of subtropical region of on the East Coast around the Solitary Islands, which is probably some of my favorite diving in the whole of Australia, and then obviously we've got the Great Barrier Reef as well, and then West Coast and Southwest Coast, which is still so undiscovered. So it's funny actually, even when you look at, you know, our current circumstances with you know, COVID-19 and the fact that we're probably not going to be able to travel internationally for a long period of time, and I kind of look at that and go, you know, that's kind of a bonus. You know, it means that actually Australian cinematographers will be shooting Australian content, because no one's going to be allowed in from other countries, and we're so lucky in the fact that we have such diverse content and such diverse landscapes that we have so much to work with. And in fact, you know, all through this lockdown process, I'm getting calls from, you know, the BBC, I'm getting calls from, you know, UK production companies that are wanting content and they want us to work, you know. And so when it opens up, we'll have a lot of work to do, which is fantastic.
And how, just, you know, in that, you know, you just listed off so many amazing landscapes across Australia, I'm wondering, do you have like a dream project in your head that you would love to do?
I think still for me, probably the an area where which I have shot a fair bit, but I think it deserves a whole lot more is down in the southwest, down in around that Bremer Bay, this Great Australian Bight. It is such a wild place. It's very inaccessible to, you know, a lot of people. It's exceptionally hard place to work with the sea conditions. It's very exposed, but it is absolutely wild. You know, when we've done Bremer expeditions, we've had, you know, huge pods of orca, we've had sperm whales, we've had, you know, new species of giant squid that biologists have kind of discovered. You know, randomly have manta rays there, I've had white sharks there. So it's kind of an absolute crazy place. It's quite a scary, intimidating place as well, but for me, I definitely think there is a lot of work that can be done there, and it could really, you know, it could be a few, yeah, production, you know, of a real grand scale that would come off exceptionally well.
Now, I want to talk about Blue. Watching that was so incredible and devastating. And obviously, you know, it went into the impacts humans are having on our oceans. And I'm thinking, do you think that you have, you know, a kind of really unique, or do you feel like you have really unique insights into our impact based on what you saw while you were filming that documentary?
I do. I think, you know, having spent, you know, so long in the ocean and you know, I've had a relatively long career that actually, you know, I've seen changes, you know, but when we filmed Blue, some of the stuff was just, you know, it's horrific, you know, and I think even seeing, you know, stuff every day when we're, you know, down in Tasmania or whatever, and there's, you know, plastic pollution down there, or you're out in the coral sea, and the devastation of, you know, coral bleaching, it's been hugely impacted, and yeah, it really is sad. And I think the scary thing as well is that people's baseline of what is the normal is changing, and it's changing, you know, much for the worse, right? So everyone's saying, oh, you know, the fish in the ocean, you know, they're only 20% less or whatever, but they're gauging that on, you know, numbers from probably 10 years ago, in which that was dramatically lower than it was 50 years ago. And so I think people are kind of not quite become complacent, but I think that people, you know, are looking at this as a new norm, and therefore if it increases a little bit, they're like, "Wait, what a great success," when unfortunately it's not, you know, and we're having huge impacts on the ocean, and it's, you know, it's sad. It really is. It's really sad.
What I liked most about Blue is that it showed these kind of incredibly devastating images of the ocean, which is, I guess, not what we're used to when we see, you know, ocean cinematography overall. I'm wondering, obviously, there's been lots of criticism of David Attenborough of late, of, you know, showing these really pristine environments, and people kind of saying, well, wait a minute, that's actually not what that looks like anymore. That's changing at a rapid rate. It's not realistic. So I'm wondering, what's the role of natural history documentaries in the age of climate change?
I think that's it's a great question, right? And I think that it's definitely not an easy answer and an easy solution. I think when people see, you know, these amazing landscapes and the amazing marine life and amazing behaviors, you know, that gives people hope, it gives people passion, which you obviously want to do. When we do, you know, when we shot Blue, and it's pretty depressing and it's very hard, you know, to watch, I sometimes feel that that audience, it doesn't necessarily get as far, you know, as far reaching, because, you know, you're not necessarily preaching to the converted, but a lot of people who watch those films are already understanding of that, you know, of those issues. So I think you really do have to kind of strike that balance where you're kind of doing both, where you're showing, you know, devastation and horrible things, but also you're showing the wonder and beauty to try and give hope at the same time. So I don't think necessarily any production has probably done that, you know, to 100%, you know, and done it exceptionally well. And I think that it is a very hard balance to strike. But I think, you know, you do need to show both sides. I think you do need to show how amazing things are. But again, you do have to show that kind of hard-hitting, you know, conservation aspect as well. But, and I think it's just a very delicate balancing act of the two.
And you talked about, you know, the idea of how, you know, sometimes certain films end up like preaching to the choir, or you don't reach a certain audience that you'd really like to reach. For you, when you're filming these sorts of, you know, incredible ocean cinematography, I mean, who do you hope that you reach?
Whenever I'm filming, I think my goal really is actually to show, you know, the next generation, you know, the future decision makers of our country. You know, I think about my kids, I think about them watching, you know, what I've shot and going, wow, that's amazing, and, you know, wow, that needs to be protected, you know. And I always, you know, stress with, you know, when I speak to, you know, younger people is actually, you know, it is amazing and there is a lot of amazing things in the world, but we do have to be careful and we do have to make, you know, significant changes in our lifestyle to make sure that these environments stay, well, not stay, but get better, you know, that they are able to recover. I think we underestimate the power of, you know, Mother Nature and the fact that actually if we do stop doing a lot of these destructive practices, it will come back, right? And it will come back, I think, relatively quickly, but it just needs a chance, right? It just needs a chance to be able to recover. And so I hope by reaching to the younger generation, the future decision makers, that they're able to basically really have that in their mind and actually think about policy change when they're older to make sure that the, you know, the environment comes first.
And lastly, John, what would be your advice to aspiring water cinematographers, not just on the cinematography side, but also, like, I guess the diving side as well?
I think the first thing, you know, above all, especially when it comes to underwater work, is you've got to have your diving absolutely dialed. I think you need to be 100% relaxed so you can focus on the task ahead. It's very rare that that I dive in pristine, no current, easy conditions. Like, it's not normally always bad weather and challenging. I think that being confident in the water is by far the foremost thing that you really need to do. And then I think you really need to just to get out there and shoot. And I think that the more you shoot, the better you get, you know, and you watch documentaries, you watch natural history work, and you try and work out how those shots were taken. And it's just, it's a long process, and but it's a rewarding process. And, you know, I'd say that my career has been exceptionally fun, and, you know, even, you know, now I still love diving, even, you know, just as for pleasure, you know. And I think that it's just a question of spending time in the water, shooting, becoming confident, diving in different environments, diving with different gear configurations. But yeah, it's time is what you need, time.
And actually, I'm going to make my final question about something that you mentioned just before. You mentioned you were shooting a documentary in the East Australian Current. Can you kind of give us, I guess, a little bit of insight into what that might look like?
Yeah, so the documentaries with it's a co-production with Wild Pacific Media, and ABC commissioned it, so it's had a decent budget to do a show on, and we're following the East Australian Current. So we're starting off in the Barrier Reef, but we only spend quite a short time up there, and it's actually more on the, you know, the temperate regions, and, you know, off the New South Wales coast. We go down to Tasmania and it finishes off down in Antarctica. And I think it was a great idea, and it's a great vehicle, that East Australian Current, but it's also very hard to visually show what a current looks like. So that was a challenge. We used a lot of humpbacks as our kind of vessel to bring us down and up the coast, which is, you know, and they're an amazing story of recovery. But yeah, no, it kind of looks at some of the areas, I think, where people haven't necessarily spent time. You know, one of my favorite spots, you know, Montague Island on the south coast of New South Wales, you know, that we had a 4 or 5 days down there, and it was just amazing. We had like 40 meters visibility, and we had so many seals. It was just such a magical time in the water. And I think, yeah, so the series is 3 1-hours all down the East Coast. So, and something that I'm exceptionally proud of. Again, it was a small crew that shot it, but I think that it looks exceptionally pretty series.
Well, thanks so much for coming on Talking Australia today, John, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing your new work.
Fantastic, Angela. Thanks very much.
That's it for today's episode of Talking Australia. If you have questions or comments, feel free to reach out. Write us an email, podcast@australiangeographic.com, or find us on Instagram @AustralianGeographic. And if you go to australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia, you'll find a special subscription offer. So don't wait. Go to australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Thanks for listening. Until next time.